Greetings from Podcastville. It's Monday the 17th. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by, oh shit, Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, whether you're a chef, a cook, part-time cook or not. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system and setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs. How it works is very easy. You choose a chef-designed recipe, we deliver the fresh, seasonal-inspired ingredients, and you cook incredible meals in 20 minutes. So do me a favor. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals. You ready for this one? For free. That easy. Check out this week's menu, and you're going to get your first three meals for free at blueapron.com/Joey. Again, that's blueapron.com/Joey. Number two, I know the holiday season's coming. You're looking to hire some people. You don't know what to do. Here's what we're going to do, all right? You got to work smart. You got to be smart, all right? You know what it is to be smart? By going to ziprecruiter.com/church. That's how you hire the right person. You might not need, you're looking for a guy, you're looking for the right candidate. ZipRecruiter is the way to go. Why? You're going, Joey, tell me why ZipRecruiter. I'll tell you why. Because these job sites that send you tons of wrong resumes to sort through, that's not smart. They're job sites that make you wait for the right candidates to apply for your job. That's not smart. You know what's not smart? Using your relatives to fill in that work while you look for staff. You know what's smart? Making the lottery the centerpiece of your retirement plan. But ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. It's a powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes. So do me a favor. No more playing around. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/church right now, and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you sign up, and you're going to find up your candidates. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/church. Number three, come on, baby. It's over. Everybody wants to make some money. You want to go to the bar. You want to be a big shot. You want to make a little extra money. You got to go to MyBookie. Why? Because you win, they pay. It's that easy. Ever since we started the podcast, Joey, who do you know? Who's going to cover? McGregor, Khabib. I don't know nothing, all right? I don't know nothing. But I'll tell you what I do know. I know where to put my bet in, at MyBookie. Why? Because they've been in business for years, and they got great reviews online. That's why. My bookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everybody the best service possible. So what I'm going to do is this. Visit my bookie today. That's my bookie, MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code CHURCH to activate the offer. And when you create your account, you claim it to $1,000 in free play. So go to my bookie right now. Lee, kick this motherfucking mule. You're sitting there watching me. It's Monday, the 17th of motherfucking September.
You bet your ass.
You bet your motherfucking ass, cocksuckers.
We're here to do it to you one time tonight to do Nashville, Tennessee. I do believe it's 5-5, 7-5, double time, all my little bit of rock and roll, little bit here, little bit there, little bit tomorrow, little bit out there. We're going to do it to you. We got to do it to you. We got to have it every night. We got to do it to you. We fall down on the pavement. Can you hear me talking at you?
Jesus fucking Christ. You guys thought it was going to be a fucked up Monday.
I know what you like.
And you know I know what you like.
I say, I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight. Now, did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now, is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
Just like that. Just like that. If you're a Christian, hang up right now. Because we're going deep in the murky waters.
This is a love song. I'd like to dedicate this to all that Nashville pussy. This is a little love song called Wang Dang Sweet Boom Tang.
Oh, shit. It's the Church of What's Happening Now. Johnny B in the house. The Christ Killer's in the house. Uncle Joey's in the house. Sean Kerrigan's in the house. I got dogs in here. I got everybody in here today. What's happening, you bad motherfuckers? I hope you had a great weekend. Philly, I want to thank you for coming out. DC, the 9 motherfucking 30 Club. Speaking of DC, we got one of DC's favorite sons here in the house tonight. My man, John Berthold. Thank you very much for coming
out.
Man,
it's good to be here, brother.
It's great to see you. I haven't seen you since we shot that fucking
movie. New Orleans.
But I was telling Sean that I walked in when I landed. I went to watch the scenes, and De Niro was, you know, De Niro had just met LL Cool J. And he had fucked him up a little bit. Like, you know, LL was cool, trying to be cool with him. And then finally...
Even fucking LL gets humbled, man. Even,
De Niro. The first two takes, he just fell apart. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, that's funny that, you know. And then it was my first, before my thing with him, I had like two lines. And John came over and he goes, I'm friends with John.
Yeah, yeah.
So at least I knew I was home. So now I could... And the first take, I looked at him. And you see every actor that he's played. You see him in the fucking retard. Remember in that movie? You see him as fucking Deer Hunter. You see him as Frankie Angel. And all of a sudden, they're like, cut, Joey, you okay? Yeah. Give me a minute. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's great to see you,
man. It's great to see you, man.
You look great. God bless you on all your work and all your success.
Thank you. Back at you.
Fucking, it's like fucking Walking Dead just... Nah, started shit. A fucking valve.
That show, man. Yeah, that was a special one, man.
And then it didn't. Now let me ask something. Like, you were a boxer first?
No, man. I boxed with him. Oh, you know, I learned how to box from Sean.
I thought that was your first dream.
No, I mean, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot from boxing. I think in terms of with this, with what we do.
He could have been a.
I mean, like, you know, I came up, you know, Sean, I can't really say enough about how much I've learned from him and how much this friendship means to me. You know, I mean, me and Sean come from the same place. We met in DC. Sean came out here first, and this motherfucker, man, you know, I was getting in all kinds of trouble growing up, and, you know, I played sports. I did baseball, football, and, you know, I ended up not being able to finish college because I was always getting in trouble. I mean, one thing after another, I ended up moving to Russia, and that's where I studied acting. I lived in Moscow for a couple years. And, you know, right before all that, you know, I knew Sean, and Sean was a professional boxer. And fucking, you know, I heard Sean's interview with you, which was great. But, you know, he's a modest guy, but, you know, he went to the Nationals. I mean, he was he's an undefeated pro. I mean, he's a serious motherfucker. And the thing also with Sean, you know, just you also got to remember he's a Division I wrestler. And, you know, not to talk about, but in a deeper, darker time in our lives, Sean Kerrigan was the most lethal dude I've ever seen in my life on the street. And I'll tell you something, never a guy to talk shit, never a guy to start a fight. That's not who he is, man.
The happiest guy in the world.
That's it, man. But if you want to be a bully around him, it's not going to work. It's not going to work, man.
It's going to be a long knife.
Not going to work. Doesn't matter. You got a knife, you got a gun. Doesn't matter. It's not going to work. And I've seen it. And, but you know, one of the things with Sean and I, you know, I don't want to talk about this stupid motherfucker the whole time because I fucking kind of hate him. But what I'll say is, you know, Sean came out here and, you know, he taught. Did you guys get into the Next Action Star thing?
Yeah, he did.
So I mean, you got to understand like what that was. You know, he came out here, and you know, Sean. You know, in DC, there's no frame of reference. You want to be an actor, that doesn't exist where we're from. There's no, you know, nobody really knows what that kind of means. And you know, Sean came out here really with nothing. He gets on this TV show right in the beginning, right in the sort of birth of reality TV, right when American Idol was started. And they wanted to do like an American Idol. And anyway, this is my fucking version of your story, so you just deal with it, dude. So, you know, right in the beginning of reality TV, you know, he gets on basically the American Idol, but for actors, for action stars. And the criteria was that you could have no real TV experience. So he came out here just being a fighter. Coming out here, he wanted to act. He had done some things back in DC. He gets on that show, and the guy who gets to win that show gets to star in a 2-hour movie aired on NBC, directed by Joel Silver. Is that right?
No, it was directed by Louis Bruno, but it was
produced by fucking Joel. Good enough, right? But that is a huge gig, man, for somebody coming out to LA with. It's huge. Sean gets on this thing, and he wins the whole fucking thing. And they had to put him in hiding so he wouldn't tell anybody, because everybody thought this show was going to be the next American Idol. And what it was doing for, I don't know, Kelly Clarkson, all these people, was going to do for these action stars. And this dude just came in and won the whole fucking thing. And to me, you know, I didn't even know that he had won it. I just knew that he did it. And for me, that was the biggest celebrity. That was the coolest shit. I mean, I remember when I first came out here, I would go to nightclubs and I'd be like, hey, man, I'm with the dude from fucking, you know, Next Action Star and shit. The show hadn't even come out, but I thought in my idiot mind that was, you know, the end all and be all, you know. And he came and he won it, and they put him in hiding, and you know, they secured holding deals with him. They, you know, ICM came in and you know represented him, and you know, he was poised to be this huge action star. And I know him, I know how talented he is, and I know how good he is, and I knew that of course this all made sense. They ended up airing the show much later than they thought they were going to air the show. And the show was a huge freaking flop. And it ended up not being the American Idol what they thought it was going to do. And as Hollywood is Hollywood, these motherfuckers, and again, this is my version of the story, but these folks, as much as they were pumping him up, now they're all turning their back on him and backing out one after another after another. And all of a sudden, this guy who has this meteoric, thank you, brother. So he's got this fucking rise. Just like that, they kind of leave him high and dry, and the movie doesn't, you know, the movie on NBC doesn't do what they thought it was going to do. And so this guy gets a taste of the falsehood and the bullshit that this town can give you. And 99.9% of these people who this would happen to would tuck tail and run.
Would
fucking leave, man.
And be a psychiatrist for a year and a half at home.
That's it. And this motherfucker, because he is a fighter, he is a real fucking man and a real fucking fighter. He said, hey, look, man, I'm not letting this thing lick me. He could have gone and fought in the UFC. He could have gone and done a million different things. He was an undefeated fucking boxer, Division I wrestler. And what he decided to do is invest and dive into acting school and to learn and put his work in. He went and did open mic nights every night. And I have so much respect for stand-up comics. I mean, I envy you guys, because you guys don't need to be hired to do your art. You know, for me, I gotta go, grind, hit the pavement, jerk people off, do whatever it takes to get hired onto a job. I love the fact that stand-ups, you just need an audience and a mic, and I'm so envious of that. But what I saw Sean do is work day in and day out, every single night, getting up there, performing somewhere. And he went and he kicked fucking ass, and he did it. Now he's got this great career in both acting and in comedy. And, you know, for me, that's about being a fighter. And it was a huge lesson for me. And it was a huge lesson for me to sort of, you know, man, for me starting out in this job, it was me and Kerrigan meeting in the mornings, 5 a.m., going to get fucking coffee. We would go to each other's auditions, wouldn't let anybody fuck with each other. We got each other the work that we got. He would be right there with me every step of the way. And we'd go box in the afternoons, we'd go out all goddamn night and start the next day. And that's what being in California was like for me. And I can't tell you how much I owe to him and how much I've learned from him and how much I respect him.
Now, before you came out here, you said you went to Russia. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Did you take any acting classes in D.C.?
Was there
anything being offered?
No, man.
Maybe at a college? Nothing.
I went to college to play baseball. I had no real business being in college. I was, you know, I was getting in trouble all the time, getting in all kinds of shit. And then, you know, in the college that I went to, I ended up taking an acting class almost as a fluke. And I've told the story before, but, you know, I ended up, because I'm an asshole, I thought I was going to be in a 250 person intro to acting class where I could drop acid, sit in the back of the theater and just watch movies, you know, because that's what I heard that the athletes did. But I was such a dipshit, I signed up for the wrong class and ended up into this intro to acting class, which was with theater majors, and it was just 10 of us sitting on the goddamn floor trying to learn how to act. And I'd never met theater people before. I didn't understand what they were like. They were so different from me. And, you know, the first assignment, I told this story before, so I'll try to be brief, but the first assignment was to bring in something that you cared about and share it with the rest of the class. And I remember the first girl, she got up, she had a Blues Traveler CD that her boyfriend had given her, and she's sharing that with the rest of the class, talking about it, and she's crying her eyes out. I'm like, this is the weirdest fucking girl I've ever, like, why is she crying in front of all these fucking people? And then the next person had a teddy bear, they're crying their eyes out, talking about it. And, you know, I it was just like a game of show and tell on steroids, you know, and slowly but surely it was working itself to me, and I'd forgotten to bring anything. So I knew I was going to a fall baseball practice right afterwards, and I had my catcher's glove. So I just decided, what do you do in that situation? I bullshitted. I made up this story about how my mom had given me this catcher's glove on her deathbed. And my mom's alive and well in D.C., you know what I mean? And I'm telling this story, and I'm fucking crying my eyes out. Everybody in the class is crying their eyes out. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm just bullshitting. I'm just doing the acting. I mean, that's what... And the teacher, this woman, Alma Becker, who ended up marrying my wife and I, she's an angel. She saved my life, man. She excused the class, and she pulled me aside. She ripped me apart for, you know, violating the sanctity of her studio. But then she said, hey, man, you fucking have something, and you need to audition for this play. And she put me in my first play, and I found it. And then when I couldn't finish college because I was always getting in trouble and it just wasn't working out, she was the one that said, hey, listen, the best, I went to her, and I didn't think acting would be any different than being a lawyer or being a plumber or being a doctor. What are the steps? That's how stupid I was. Like, what are the steps that you have to take to make that happen? And she said, look, if I was you, if I was a young actor, I would audition for the Moscow Art Theater. It's the best theater school in the world. And I think deep down, she knew she needed to get me away from all my craziness and my knucklehead friends and the people that were sort of I was doing the crazy shit that I was doing with. And I ended up moving to Russia, man. And I was there for about 2 years. And Moscow in the late 90s, that shit opened my world up. It taught me so much about being an artist. And it was the first place, you know, to be an actor in Russia. It's a very masculine profession, man. It's not like here. It's not like the people I grew up, and it's stupid. You know, they look at being an artist and it's they look down on it. Like it's a weak profession, you know, like it's not a profession of building and putting in work and craftsmanship and sweat and tears. And, you know, in Russia, you go around, they have statues on every street corner of playwrights and of poets and of actors, and being an artist is something that's celebrated and revered because of how much work it takes and how strong you need to be and how much you need to experience life and investigate every fucking nook and cranny of life, and you need to go live among all kinds of people. They understand that, and it's a brutal school and a brutal profession, and they get that and they celebrate that. And I just thank God that, you know, Alma sent me there, and that's where I got to sort of cut my teeth, because that made me who I am. There's no way I'd be doing this shit if it weren't for that.
We've been acting since day one, since mm-hmm. Jesus left Chicago. But the guy that honed in the acting was Stanislavski.
That's it. Right? And that's the school that I went to.
The school you went
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, Moscow.
So it was like teaching to Stanislavski. And I remember that then they came to the United States, and like three of them broke off.
Yeah,
Stella Adler,
Meisner,
the guy that played The Godfather.
Yeah, Lee Strasberg. Yeah, so Strasberg. Basically the group theater. Yeah, came
so
from
it
that.
Became like a group theater and stuff like that, which has always been very interesting to me. So you are considered a method actor.
I don't. You look, man. You know what that is. You know the crazy shit is you know acting is you know. I don't want to give a fucking history lesson, but you know when Stanislavski, you know, for them to take that trip, it had to be sanctioned by the government, right? So in 1933, they went on a world tour with a play called The Seagull, which is one of Chekhov's most famous plays. Stanislavski starred in it and he directed in it. And they went to Europe.
Not to interrupt you. Now, yeah. When you went to Russia, did you yeah. learn how to act in Russian, or did they speak American? I'm just curious.
So everybody in my class spoke Russian. They're all Russian. I spoke English, but the whole point was that if the acting's good, I went to go see the theater every night in Russian. I understood every fucking, if it's good, if the acting is good and you're playing what you're going for clearly and with all your heart, you'll know exactly what's going on.
I believe the language doesn't fucking matter. I truly believe
and,
that.
And your first year there, you don't speak any text. It's all about getting your body right and your mind right and learning how to play actions with people, learning to connect with people, learning how to build an ensemble with people. But when they were doing this world tour of this play, it was the first time ever what acting was up until that point. It was presentational. So it was assholes going to the front of the stage and proclaiming to the audience and everybody looking straight out. And then what Stanislavski did is he started out, the play starts and everybody's got their back to the audience. They're really drinking tea. They're talking to each other, not talking to the audience. And that shit blew fucking people's minds. Realism blew fucking people's minds. And so the whole thing about method and, you know, it gets so like, I feel like bastardized. And nowadays it's like all these people, they just want to wear being a method actor as like a badge of courage. You know, like, you know, I fucking got my leg bit off by a shark because I'm going to be in a movie about fucking fish. You know, it's like everybody wants to fucking show how hard they work. But, you know, for me, you know, what method acting really means is just an absolute commitment to being truthful, you know, and to not to knowing it and to understanding it and putting it in your heart enough that it's you and this other person. You guys are soldiers for a story that you're working on together, and it's not about doing a whole bunch of acting. It's not about sort of showing anything. It's about being right there. And whatever it takes for you to get there, that's your method. You know
I always loved, like when I got here, I was a dirty stand-up comic. I don't know about nothing. You go to the comedy store, you do comedy, and somebody comes and talks to you one day about being on TV. But then I heard about bad acting, so I started taking acting classes. And it was so weird that I took like the, you take the basic one, like Frank Megna, off of Gardner across from Toy.
Yeah.
Behind Toy, there's a little actor studio. He was on Monday nights, but he hated stand-ups. He liked me, but he didn't like stand-ups in his acting class because he says we were a little too wild for him. So I went over to Ivana Chubbuck. I don't know what the fuck she teaches over there.
Yeah.
But she had the blonde, you know, Therese Chiron.
Yeah.
And she had Halle Berry, who had won Academy Awards back-to-back, so that got her everybody in town.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. When I was going to acting class, it showed me how to hustle as an actor. Like, I wasn't hustling as a stand-up no more because the stand-up world wasn't responding to my material. So I was getting breakdowns at 5. I would pull them off and email them to my manager by 9 or my agent. And in those days, there was no computerized thing. So I had 3 agents.
Yeah.
In my world, it was whoever called first.
That's it, brother.
So I would call Sean Kerrigan. Sean Kerrigan, they're casting this movie. I call you back in an hour. You had an hour. What happened? Oh, I left a message. Go fuck your mother.
That's it.
Yo, call this guy. Yeah. Yo, call this guy. I would sick 3 people, and 3 people would be pitching the same one. And it's amazing. I had 3 agents at one time, and the auditions I was going in, it taught me what each agent saw me as.
Mm-hmm.
I had a gay guy that was crazy gay up here north in Ventura.
Yeah.
I mean, telling me about bars in Hollywood where if there's a red light, they're all sucking dick in there.
Yeah,
I mean, this guy was crazy gay. He only represented theater actors in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And he took me, he saw me at the store.
Yeah.
But he would send me for high-level stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he was an agent by himself that would call casting people. Like, he got me a movie that it was an extra. He contacted the writer and made the writer write me, and he thought it would be a funny thing, and they listened to him.
Yeah.
Like, he had been around that long.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, I really got into the acting thing.
Yeah.
But then it got to a point where it got creepy.
How so?
It was too creepy for me. Like, I started working with people that they had to be in character before the thing, and don't talk to me, and, you know, the trailer, and then I was like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm done with that part of it. You know, don't listen, I love the acting thing. I love Stanislavski, and I love Stella Adler and everybody, but I got bad news for you.
Yeah.
I know a bunch of fucking black dudes from Compton
that
they put them in a movie with no previous experience. They could fog up the bottom of a glass. Queen Latifah, she came from East Orange, New Jersey.
That's it.
Look at her now. So do you understand my comparison in my head?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, there's people, and then there's other people. But the people who study like you, I see that richness in your work.
Look, man, I appreciate you saying
that.
Look,
I see that
but
richness.
I hear what you're saying. You got to live life,
man.
You got to go through life. You got to, you know, you got to be, you know, that's what we do. We're telling stories.
How long, what year did you get here?
I got here, I think 2004.
How about you, Sean?
2001.
Do you remember on Santa Monica, on Fountain, right below, like, the Comedy Store in that area, there was an acting coach. And every hour on the hour, when you drove on Fountain, you would see 40 people.
Reading lines out loud.
Reading lines on the street.
Yeah, I remember that.
Dog, and I used to beep at them. He knows. He knows. I'd beep and go crazy at people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would tell them, get out of there.
Yeah.
You're a bunch of dick suckers. I ain't going to do nothing for you.
Yeah,
listen, in my world, me reading on Santa Monica Boulevard with some other mook,
that
ain't going to fucking cut. It got too abusive.
You know,
Ivana Chubbuck was making women strip. Like, when you meet an actress from Ivana Chubbuck that's been there for a year, she's crazy. Because Ivana Chubbuck made women do shit they wouldn't normally do. Take off your blouse and show the audience your tits. And they would crack, dog. They would
crack. But motherfuckers, I mean, you want a dream.
You'll
pay
that's
fucking
it.
Money for it. And that's the problem I've really found. You know, I never did, like, acting classes out here, but you know, look, versus Russia, you know, here to be an acting teacher, so many people are doing it because it didn't work out for them, or because they're validating their own sort of thing. Like, they're staying in the world by taking other people's money and showing you how to do it. But you didn't fucking do it. So how are you showing You know, like, what do you really have to offer? And don't get me wrong, I think there's great coaches. But, you know, in Russia, the way it worked, the highest honor that you could get, the highest honor was to be a teacher. So if you, you know, my teachers were the biggest and most respected actors of stage and screen. Those were the teachers over there.
Who was one of the greatest NBA teams in the last 20 years? Who had one of the greatest dynasties? I mean,
the Bulls.
The Bulls. Let's talk about the Bulls. Who coached the Bulls?
Phil Jackson.
Did you ever see Phil Jackson play basketball?
He played.
You wanted to stick a stab through your heart. He was the sixth man.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had no meat on his bones.
Yeah.
And I was in the eighth grade, and me and Whitey O'Donnell were gambling addicts.
Yeah.
So we would split five times. That's $12.50 a piece, 15 if you lose.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. Whenever they put Phil Jackson, we'd just hang up on each other. Like, we were kids, and we'd watch the fucking whole game on the phone. Like, and we were like, come on, they're going to cover the spread.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, hold on, substitute Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
Fuck! And you would hang up the phone because he'd always blow it. He was the best sixth man in the league, but he had no bones to him.
Yeah.
Just because you're not a good player doesn't mean. I believe that. And there's a lot of things about me that I've seen it. I've seen guys that are not great comedians, but when you talk to them, they have great comedy knowledge, and you'll learn something. They just didn't know how to express it.
Sure.
Phil Jackson, every time they put him in, I just hung up on Whitey. Whitey, go fuck your mother. You cocksucker making me bet the Knicks. You fuck. I thought he was hurt. You know what I'm saying? I thought he was hurt. Jesus Christ. But look what he went on to do with two teams. Didn't he came out to the Lakers for a while or something? So that, I didn't mind that. There was one particular guy in town, and I want to give him up. He taught me for like 6 months, and then he booked the cold case. It was the worst episode of cold case they ever made. Like, he kept calling me, when are you coming back? Never.
Yeah.
And I just hung up the phone. Like, I had the craziest acting teachers. I had a gay guy that had the HIV, and he would coach me for $20 a coach. He was the best coach ever.
Wow.
He started getting me callbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
In those days when you went to callbacks, Travolta was in the room, or Danny DeVito was in the room, or like in callbacks, he would just show up to a callback, but the actors were in the room.
Yeah.
And my hands would go in there, and the sides would shake. You remember those days, Sean Kerrigan? And they're like, okay, calm down. Just read it how it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's such a process. But you said, fuck, I'm going to Moscow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like, fuck New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck those dick suckers.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck LA and those dick suckers. Yeah. I'm taking it right to the hoot or the toot. That's like going to Muay Thailand. That's like going to Thailand and following that perverted coach into the cave. But you learn Muay Thai in Muay Thaiville. You know, you want to learn how to cook French. What are you going to learn in New York?
Yeah.
Go to France for three fucking years.
Yeah.
That's what I respect about you.
Yeah, thank you.
That you went to the heart of the fucking matter.
Yeah.
You took 2 years. You
it
came
wasn't
back.
Some smart idea of mine, though, man. I got led that. I didn't know what the fuck I was. Nah, I just.
How was
I,
Russia
I just got
in those
lucky.
Days? How was,
it absolutely insane.
You know who else lived in Russia?
Who?
Mike Swick. You remember Mike Swick, the UFC fighter?
No.
Good guy. His mother was the consulate. Or the ambassador of Russia. So he grew up in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
And one day he was telling me and Rogan Russian stories for 6 hours about how it works in Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
You pay at every level.
Every level.
They don't fuck around.
Yeah.
You get a dollar, it's not really your dollar.
Yeah.
You just, it's not just on loan. Next thing you know, you got 18 cents. Everybody has their fucking hand down in Russia.
That's it.
Just creepy stories. Now, after Russia, you end up in New York.
Yeah, I went from Russia to New York. I was there for about a year or so, just doing what I could do, and it was crazy. Actually, right from Russia, Harvard's got a graduate school for acting that takes their students to Russia to get taught by these Russian masters. They saw me in a show acting with these Russian kids. They saw me in a show and they said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I told them my story. They said, "Hey, would you want to come to graduate school in Harvard?" And they invited me to come there. I said, a kid like I didn't finish college. I was like a fucking fuck up. And I said, yeah, man, of course I'll do that. So I actually went from Russia then to Boston. I lived in Boston for 2 years studying there and then went back to Russia, but this time as a Harvard student.
Which how are you making a living doing all this?
Well, when I was in Russia, I played baseball. I played some pro baseball, which was like a joke over there. But I got paid a little bit. But then when I went to Harvard, it's just student loans. Yeah. And then you come out and then you talk about a racket. You know, you talk about a kid coming out of acting school and then you owe $70,000 and you can't do a fucking thing. You know, because that's the thing. I thought I was going to go to Harvard and I thought, finally, I'm going to be with the best of the best. You know, they see 10,000 kids. They only take these few and these are going to be the fucking best. And I remember on the first day, everybody got to do their thing. And I'm like, oh, really? This is... this is it. You know, these are this is who's here. And you know, for a lot of these kids, they never had a chance, but it's a racket. They actually closed the school down there because they were ripping people off, because you saw the amount of loans that people took off and no one was making any money in the field. And so they said that the school was unlawful.
And they let's be honest, it's 2018 and they do it to you here. You get out of college, one night you watch Saturday Night Live with your fraternity boys, and you're like, that's what I want to do. I saw it for years. Yeah. When I went to Improv Olympic to take writing classes, I just signed up to take a sketch writing class to learn how to write sketches. And I was surrounded by kids that were living off of credit cards, that their dad sent them out here on a tweet, like their dad's owned the biggest tomato company in like Jersey, but said, okay, I'll give you a credit card, and you go out there. And they're at the Groundlings, they're at Avanichubbuck, they're taking voice classes, and everybody's telling them not to go out on auditions.
Yeah.
Like, don't go out on auditions, like, until I tell you to. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even in acting class, and I was taking chances at audition. I was telling them, the shit I booked the first two times, I didn't even know what get on the mark was, stand on the mark. I didn't know action or direct. I didn't know nothing.
The first job I went, they told me to go to the hair and makeup trailer. I didn't know what the fuck a hair and makeup trailer. You know Poppy about. Montgomery? I walked right into her trailer, man. She was changing. She's like, get out, you motherfucker! And threw a fucking shoe at my head.
She's hot.
That was they look.
Oh, my God. She's beautiful.
Yeah, I took an extra second closing the door.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, I think the hardest thing, and I did not discuss it with you, Sean Kerrigan, the hardest acting job I ever had in L.A., that if I wouldn't have had the chops, I would have got fired the first day was a soap opera.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing, because nobody talks to you. It's like you got the flu. You walk into ABC, you sign in, they tell you to go to locker room to 12, you go to locker room 12, some chick comes in and says, read the teleprompter. Yeah. It'll tell you, what are you talking about? You know, the teleprompter will tell you when to come out. And they'll say, scene 34, rehearse, you go out there, boom. You rehearse, and next thing you know, they're like, go.
That's what I couldn't believe.
Oh, my God.
Fucking no joke.
I was like, we ain't fucking around. Then I had another scene, they're like, stay close. And I'm like, stay close means an hour and a half. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Shit. Boom. Both soap operas I shot, I was in at 8 and out by 9:30. Like, really, guys?
Yeah.
We don't play here. This is three, four cameras.
Yeah. Fast-moving train.
I would have never. And you know how, like, when you... In a movie, you go, okay, action, and your line is like, I told you not to fucking touch the dog.
Yeah.
They don't even play that shit.
Yeah.
They don't even start from I told you. They start where? The dog.
Yeah, go.
No, start from the dog. Yeah. No, not from the top. No, the dog.
Yeah.
The dog. Okay, cut. That was beautiful. Thank you very much for coming in. Yeah. They blow a whistle, and you're out of there.
Get the fuck out of there.
You get the thing, they take your scarf off, and I never saw nothing like that in my life. Like, I was not. If I would have got here off the boat, and been prepared for and been hired on a soap opera, I would have got fired. Yeah. I got fired my second job from Telemundo. They hired me as a Cuban doorman, and I went in there talking to street Cuban.
Yeah.
And they all looked at each other, and I went out for lunch. And before I could come back, I got a page from Daniel Hoff saying, don't even go back, they're going to pay you for the day.
Yeah.
And they paid for my after. After was $8.50 back then.
Yeah.
And they paid for my after. That's always great, getting fucking fired.
Yeah, I got fired.
Now, let me ask you this, because I looked at your IMDb, not your IMDb, your Wikipedia. Yeah. How long did you do Tina and Tony's Wedding for?
I didn't do that. I did the movie. I didn't do the play.
Holy shit.
I did the movie in New York. That was my first.
When did the movie fucking come out?
Yeah, you didn't see it. It didn't come out. Yeah.
It didn't come out?
Nah, nothing happened with that.
Listen, movie. I did that for 1 week.
Oh, did you?
I was in Seattle, and a guy came up to me, and I need to talk to you.
Yeah.
And we want to make you the host of the thing.
Yeah.
The guy that's the host.
Yeah.
It was nothing. It was like $75 a week.
Yeah.
Four shows. You got to eat shitty spaghetti.
Oh, yeah. You got to follow him into the bathroom, taking a piss, making conversations.
Yeah. It's
crazy,
man.
It's
fucking horrid.
Yeah.
And they said, just do Wednesday through Sunday and let us know on Sunday. Dog, I told them on Saturday. I go, you ain't going to see Mike Cuban. What do you mean? We got a replacement. You're going to ruin it.
For what? The Tony and Tina's in New York or here?
Tina and Tony's in Seattle.
In Seattle. I'll tell you what, brother. I auditioned for that shit in D.C. like three times. I wanted to be in that place.
In the play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I get paid to act at that point, you pay me anything, I'll do it. You know what I mean?
It was interactive, though.
It was interactive.
Very interactive. You got to go to the table. Boy, you doing the priest.
The whole thing.
The whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
It drove me crazy.
Yeah.
It drove me crazy. Yeah. It drove me fucking out. Like, I was like, I'm done with my career because I'm quitting this job. Yeah. I never had nothing.
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah. Latina and Tony.
How long did
you kicked it 2 years in New York? Were you booking anything in New York?
I was doing all right, man. I was doing like some, you know, I did like the Law and Orders and stuff like that. And I was getting enough that, you know, to me, I was getting enough that I would go in and I would do well, so people would sort of have me back, kind of thing. But I, you know, it was strange, man. Just like you, I was so green and I had no idea. I had no idea what acting on camera really was about. I used to wake up every single morning. I'd get up, and at 5 a.m. every morning, they'd do something called EPAs, Equity Principal Auditions, where you could sign up. It was an open call every single morning. And for me, I just wanted to get better at audition. I guess it's like for you guys going to open mics. So I would get up, and it's just they would take the first 200 people, and it's people without agents. So every morning in New York, I don't know if they still do it, but you can get there, and if you're the first 200, the door opens at 5, and by, you know, 5:30, you got 200 people there. And every single morning, I'd go and I would just do my monologues in front of people, and for that just to sort of exercise and see what that was like, and just perform a little bit. So I was doing that. I got a couple jobs off of that, and then I started doing I did Tony and Tina's. I did a few shows here and there, but then. I remember there was, I really wanted to move to Los Angeles, and I was with an agency that had an LA office, and my brother was living out here. One of my best friends was living out here. And so I told my agent I really want to come out there, and they said, well, you don't have enough credits. We can't represent you out here. So I said, you just let me know when an LA agent comes to the office. One day he calls me up. There's an LA agent in the office. I went right up to like an asshole, and I said, hey, listen, you're saying you can't represent me in LA, so here's the thing. Let's just go in that room and let me just do this monologue for you. And if after that I do that monologue, you tell me you can't represent me, I'll leave you alone. But I just want to give it a shot. So we go into the room and I do the monologue. She says, you got an agent in LA. You got it. And I went and did a play, got rid of all my shit.
Who was the agent?
Marty Rosenzweig, okay. Right? And I went and did a play up in Portland, Maine. And when that was done, I was moving to LA, and I called her up and I said, hey, it's me. Remember, I just want to make sure everything's set because I'm coming out there. She goes, yeah, you don't have enough credits. We can't represent you out there. I go, no, I'm the fucking guy from the fucking monologue. Remember, I'm that guy. And she's like, yeah, you know, you don't have enough credits. So I had a ticket out to LA. My brother got me a ticket because it was one of those weekends where it was like so fucking cold in New York. They say, like, you can't even go outside. I call my brother. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, yeah, we're just getting high by the pool. I'm like, God, I want to fucking be out there so bad. He sent me a ticket. I go out and I visit him for the weekend. And after the weekend, I'd gone out messing around with them all fucking night. And I lost my credit card. I lost my ID, so I couldn't fly back. The next day, my New York agent gets me an audition in LA for a pilot. I end up testing for the pilot. Now, all of a sudden, they want to represent me. So I had an agent. I just never went back. Left all my shit there. I just never went back. That was it.
That's it. No looking back.
No looking back.
You've been here. And what year was that?
That was like 2003, 2004.
And how was business then, 2003?
It was rough, man. I mean, look, you know, those first couple years, I mean, I remember my wife, she was my girlfriend then. She's an ICU trauma nurse. And, you know, I would come home sometimes and I'd just be like, look, baby, this ain't gonna fucking work for me. Like, it just ain't happening. You know, it's and I'd be like, you know, I'd be sitting there crying in my pillow. You know, like this just after all this shit, after all this work, it's just not gonna happen. You know, and then she tells me about her day of like scooping some guy's brains back in his head, or telling some little girl she's never gonna see her dad again, and she basically gave me a look like, fucking buck the fuck up, motherfucker. You know, stop that shit. And it was about, you know, there was about a year there where it was really, really rough. And and then, you know, I started work now and then. I started getting.
Did you generate any work on your own these times? Did you send thank you letters to agents?
I did what you were talking about. I was vicious about being on those breakdowns, and I was vicious about. I mean, I would just go to casting offices where they were casting things, and even if I didn't have an audition, I would just look. The one thing I will say, I was very confident. So I would go in and I would say, look, I know I'm not on any list, and I know you're not supposed to see me today, but I'll just fucking wait here. And when you're done, or maybe before lunch, just let me do my thing. And if you don't like it, I'll never fucking come back.
See, this was post 9. His was easy. Because I was pre 9/11 when you could walk into the lot.
Yeah.
You could just walk to the lot and go, I'm going to Nancy Gumbat's office. And in those days, I would get the, like, I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I took criminal skills.
Yeah.
I was working with actors and I was saying, how lazy are these guys?
Yeah.
So wait a second, how does it work in your world? Well, our agent submits us,
yeah,
and then we wait for an audition.
Yeah, fuck all that.
And I was like, that's not going to work in my world.
Yeah, exactly.
A gangster one time, a Jersey gangster told me that a casting director's movie, their job is to cast a movie. this guy was like a retard that told me this line.
Yeah.
You know what? A casting director's job is to cast a movie. Did you ever think about that? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And I started getting envelopes. I would go on the breakdowns. But see, the breakdowns, for people who don't know at home, it's a service that comes out that tells you the commercial shootings in town. Like, not commercials and films that are commercial shootings.
Yeah.
There's 1,000 movies that are made that you don't even see the breakdown at. They don't even, it's all in-house through CAA and ICM, or they'll hire somebody from WME, but you don't see it. In those days, you got called in. So it really teaches you, the breakdown also teaches you that even if you're right for something, you don't know how many times I went to the office and called and they would say, the guy had a brother-in-law that was perfect for the job.
Yeah.
I learned a lot because I didn't take no for an answer. Yep. In those days, I told him the other day, if you're a comic and you're not up at 9 and out of your house, don't fucking talk to me. Because in those days, at 9 a.m., I had 6 or 7 yellow envelopes. I remember going for an audition for a De Niro movie with Marky Wahlberg that was sold by Vinnie Curto. Do any of you guys know who Vinnie Curto is? He's a boxer that won the welterweight championship at 44. He's a little bots. He's tremendous to see at auditions. I would see him at auditions and go, Vinny, come here. Did you hear about the dude De Niro movie?
Yeah.
And he'd go, no, who's casting it? Casting out of New York. I just make up a name. John B. And before he'd go in, he'd come back to me and he'd go, what's the name of that movie again? And I'd go, Mafia 6. It's with these two guys. And I would goof on him. I'd go home and he'd call me and go, what's the name of the movie again? The Joe Rogan Story. It's directed by John Bernthal. And he was, who's in it? De Niro, Pacino, everybody, call your agent. He would call me back. My agent can't find it on the breakdown. It was hilarious. But he really did win. He really did win. And he was supposed to fight Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
Wow.
And he booked up Dog. You guys, you two sit with him. Stories about Sammy the Bull made him fight under a Puerto Rican name and put a wig on him at the Garden.
Is that right?
Oh, Dog, he's got, if you open up Sinatra Live from whatever, the album, it's all Vinnie Curto with Sinatra. He's talking about being in Palm Springs with Sinatra, and Sinatra going, in the mood for a hot dog. In for a hot dog. He sent this pilot to Vegas to get Sabret hot dogs.
Wow.
And he goes, when he came back, and you know Vinnie Curto, he's a boxer. He's like, when he came back, he was cooking these hot dogs, and I did the math in my head. Those hot dogs must have cost $8,000 a piece to go get. So I ate like 8 of them just out of respect, even though I was in training. I had to run an extra mile every day. He's got real stories.
Yeah.
And he said that's he was boxing at the Garden under like the name of Tito Ortiz with a blonde hair on.
Yeah.
And that Sinatra walked in. And Sinatra looked at him and goes, Vinny, you ain't no fucking spick. Get the fuck out of that fucking ring right now.
Yeah.
And Sammy kept saying, you better fucking be careful. And he's like, he ain't fighting under no spick's name.
Yeah.
And they took him out and they took him to a hotel and hit him out for the night.
Wow.
And Sinatra had to negotiate for him. He's got Dog as a script writer.
Fuck yeah.
There's no, and Vinnie Curto, like, forget shit. He took a script writing class and he came out here. Yeah. He didn't sell not one script. He sold 2 scripts. He sold another script about being on the run from the mob.
Yeah.
And he went to Canada. There was a kid that was handicapped. And all he wanted to do was run up the hill. So every day he would push the kid to run up the hill. And finally the kid ran up the hill. And the next day he died. Dog! Whoa. A story that everybody was in. They were having a bidding war. But when De Niro bought the movie from him with Marky Wahlberg, this is 98.
Yeah.
That's when this guy, he's the guy. Any of you guys ever see 29th Street? It's an old movie about like a neighborhood with... who was the Australian actor for a while that was really hot? Russell Anthony Lampaglia.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really funny movie about the 29th Street, New York City. And he's the guy like, who sent you? No names. He's one of the, so when I saw him at the Comedy Store, I fell in love with him. And he's half Cuban, half Italian. He's from Boston. And Rogan, all those guys will say, dog, his body shot. He was supposed to fight Hagler, but something happened. He was up next.
How come he didn't fight Hagler?
Something happened. Something weird happened when he sold the script to De Niro and Marky Wahlberg. Listen, they were about to shoot on Monday, and he went to a party on Wednesday and started saying racial slurs about De Niro's wife at a party.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And that was the end of that tune. They pulled the fucking movie. But when I went to see that woman, I forget what her name was. You ready for this? She goes, oh, before, first of all, I did a read that was just god awful. You ever read for somebody and it's just god-awful? Like, I just got here. It was the third time in front of a casting director. It was god-awful.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, before you leave, she goes, hold on. And she turned around. She gave me a stack of my envelopes. with all the headshots. It was like 18. Like, I was hitting her up every week. I didn't fuck around, guys.
Yeah.
Your job is to cast the fucking movie. My job is to book it.
That's it.
My agent says I can't come in here because I don't have enough credits. That's great.
Yeah.
Let me read for you. Yeah. That's what I would do. Yeah. I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Now, I advise you to do it, but you're not going to get in through the gate unless they're in an independent building.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get through the gate.
Yeah.
Did you guys always have this confidence, or was it... because I can't imagine, like, all of us came to L.A., and, like, L.A. is, like, kind of scary to come to from the East Coast. You went from the East Coast to Russia, where you didn't speak the language, to a school where they didn't speak your language, and to now coming out here. But did it seem kind of easy to come out here to L.A.? Like, it's not that big of a deal.
I go back to the same thing. I go back to the same thing, like, what we were talking about boxing and being in the ring. And, you know, like, you got to go back to... you know, why you're doing it in the first place. Because I'll tell you right now, man, three days into Russia, I got a gunpoint in my head. You know, I like being in that city, seeing how far, first of all, seeing the Russian kids, seeing, you know, if you make it through that school, it's not like schools here. If you make it through that school, you're going to work. Like they see 10,000 kids, they take 100 and then they cut it in half each year. And then they only graduate 10 kids. And those 10 kids in their fourth year, when they show up at the theater each night, all they do is perform in their fourth year. And when they show up each night, they're told which of 10 plays they're going to do and which role they're going to play. And it could be male or female. So they don't know whether they're doing West Side Story or they're doing Hamlet or they're doing, and they know everything. They know everything stone fucking cold. And so, you know, for me, like when I would run into trouble and when I would sort of, even now, you know, I mean, there's times where I run up against walls. I go back and I think about, why am I doing this in the first place? I think about experiences I've had where there've been more people on stage than in the audience. And we fucking ripped, man. We ripped. We put everything we had into it. And, you know, it's like, if you can get through all those times, you can get through all this. I mean, shit, I'm doing a movie right now. Fucking Christian Bale, Matt Damon, huge director. You know, I got, you know, it's an amazing opportunity. Sean came and visited me on set my first week. I'd gone right from Punisher into that. And I was nervous as all hell. I was a mess. I wasn't myself. And he said, hey, motherfucker, be you, goddammit. Like, be who the fuck you are. You're going in like this. I got an open palm now for all you people in fucking podcast land. And he close your fucking fist and go in there and be who the fuck you are. And that shit totally changed everything for me on this. You know, so we're all human, you know. But I will say, you know, for me, when I look back, if I saw a kid sort of in my position when I was first starting, I would say you're a fucking goofball, man. You got way too much confidence. I mean, I would go in and I would do things that I would never advise somebody trying to be an actor to do. I mean, I literally would walk into any room, say anything, say I could do things that I couldn't necessarily do. I was just balls to the wall. There's no way you were going to tell me no. No way.
And we have this conversation. This is a recurring thing because last year I started going back to open mics. I was a little disillusioned with stand-up, you know, because you started as a hobby, and then one day it becomes a business, and that just throws everything off. You know, like, there's a script that you really want to do. You love the director. You love the material, but there's no money in the project, and your agent's telling you that you got a movie with Antonio Banderas that pays you $500,000, but you don't give a fuck about the $500,000.
Yeah.
You really, really want to do this movie, so it becomes a business, and it sucks. It sucks being on a stage you don't want to be on. Mm-hmm. It sucks to be in a movie you don't want to be in. And I'm sure you picked movies that said, what the fuck am I doing here after the third day? Sure. But my kid's going to eat next week.
That's it.
You know, your kid's going to eat next week, you know. I started going back to open mics and I'm looking around. It's like if you went to acting class.
Right.
If you told me next week I'm going to the $100 a month acting class, which is the bottom of the barrel. And if you sat there, you're going to look around these people and say, I was every one of these people. I've been doing comedy for 27 years. So I am every one of these people. I want to know what kept you going that fourth year. That's the question now after 27. Like, I even did a podcast 2 weeks ago where I broke down the first 10 years of comedy because I'm still looking for the answer. Like, who the fuck told you that you had a chance at the, like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, I would stand up every 6 months. I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm living in a basement. I'm barely paying my bills. I'm barely, I'm barely surviving. And then a headliner tells you, hey, man, that was a great fucking joke.
Those
junk.
Little things, man. It's fuel,
and you're
bro.
Like, okay.
That's it.
The bro, that's a fuck. You were killing me in the back. Or you're at a club and a headliner laughs. Or next thing you know, a headliner sees you and asks you to go on a weekend with them. Those little things. And then they go from being one a month.
Yeah, that's it.
To two a month.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm still not making a living, you know? And then they go to four a month, you know? But that was my main question. Like, I want Anthony Robbins to fucking go into the mind and let us know at the five-year mark what gave us the balls to go, you know what? I'm going to give this another year.
Yeah.
Like, for me, I kept saying 6 months. And then I would book a commercial. Or Mitzi Shore would give me an 11:30 spot in the main room. Or it was always something.
But it's why the fuck you're doing it in the first place. You said it's why you're doing it. You know what I mean? Like, for me, man, you know, the experience of going in there, even if it's an audition that I never got, but going into a room and knowing I got every motherfucker in that room and they're feeling something, that's why we're doing. We're not doing it for the money. We're not doing it for anything else. And how blessed are we that we get to live a life that our entire purpose is to go after something that we'll never fucking get. We'll never fucking get there. And it's not about some crazy journey. I mean, it's not about some destination. It's about getting there. It's about chasing something out in front of you that you'll never attain, but you can always get better. You can always learn and you can always fucking fail. And you're really lucky to have that. You know, most people don't get that. Most people don't get to throw everything on the line and have that. I mean, for what you guys do going up there and fucking do state, you can fucking bomb and embarrass the fuck out of yourself every night, man. Oh. And I like, I thought, well, I would go watch him in the beginning. Oh. I would be a nervous fucking wreck. I would nervous. Be a mess. And this is nervous. A guy. And let me tell you something. He will beat the fuck out of everyone in here. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. I'm like, it's fucking Sean Carey. It's my. It didn't. I was so nervous for him. I was like, oh my God, look at him up there. Oh fuck it. He would start. I'm like, I don't know. Okay, that was okay. And you know, people would laugh. And people wouldn't be laughing or people would be talking. I swear to God, I was going to get fucking locked up again. I was going to kill them for fucking talking during his set. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And, I you know, but look, every time you step on set, you've got that, you run that risk. Every take, you run the risk of fucking failing. And that's awesome. Because a lot of people don't get that, man. A lot of people don't get that. Fuck all the money, fuck all the other bullshit. That's why we do this. You know, when I was a kid, I used to read this book in the doctor's office, a Babe Ruth book. And it was like a little fucking cartoon book. And I remember there was this picture of Babe Ruth, and he was fat as hell, and he was leaning up against the ball field, and he was eating a hot dog, and he was talking to some kid. He said, hey, kid, I got it all figured out. And he said, what's that? He said, I get paid to play baseball and eat hot dogs. And that stuck with me, man. I was like, wow, he gets paid to do the two things he fucking loves, eat baseball or fucking eat hot dogs and play baseball. You know what I mean? And there's something that, you know, you're blessed if you're in that position. Where you are in your journey, who gives a fuck? You're on your journey. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter.
No, it couldn't be. I mean, that's... It's, I couldn't imagine not doing stand-up and waking up one day when you're 52, working as a general manager I got nothing against the working man. I'm just saying that you didn't go for your dream. Even if it was a little tiny dream, what a shit life you had because you lived your life scared.
If you knew it. I mean, some people, they don't, you know, like, I think some people's dream is to, you know, who knows what somebody's dream is? You know what I mean? Some people's dream is to raise a family. Some people's dream is to travel the world. But if you're sick enough to have a dream like this one, you better fucking go after it with everything you got. You better fucking go. Because I think you're right. I think if you pull off on that, if you take your foot off the accelerator on that, you know, you'll never, and who, I don't know, because I haven't done it, but I think that the thing that we fear is, shit, I just didn't give anything here. I just didn't leave it all on the table. And that's an odd, you know, it's like what De Niro says in Bronx Tale, you know, wasted talent, man, nothing worse, no bigger tragedy. You know what I mean?
So you putzed it around this town until Walking Dead. You think Walking Dead was the beginning?
You know, man, it was really two things sort of happened in unison. You know, you know, up until that point, I'd gotten into a lot of trouble growing up, and I just was like, you know, really, you know, I come from a family. Both my brothers are my blood brothers are tremendously successful guys, and I was just the fuck up of the family. You know, and I just couldn't get anything right. I found this thing, and there was finally something I was good at. But you know, when I came out here, even though life had tried to teach me every lesson, I'd been locked up, I'd been fucking beaten up, I'd been jumped, I'd been all this crazy shit, got kicked out of schools. When I found this acting thing, I really found purpose. And, you know, but I will say it was a time in my life, me and this motherfucker were running around the city like wild fucking animals.
But you were roommates at one time?
I mean, we were with each other every damn day.
I didn't know if you were still roommates.
Yeah, we lived right down the street from
you. Right down the street. But I mean, times were crazy back then. I mean, we were really, it was crazy. I mean, it didn't matter what hour of the day. Somehow, I mean, I saw this guy beat up some guy, called himself a paratrooper. He beat him over the head with a fucking magazine at 6 a.m. in front of a coffee shop in Venice. I mean, it was like, you know, our best friend got stabbed in the stomach and, you know, we're delivering him to my little brother who's a doctor in the middle of the night. Like, this is all happening while I'm going and doing movies with Roman Polanski and Oliver Stone. I mean, like, crazy shit was going on, and we were just going a million miles an hour. And then on July 3rd, 2009... you know, we used to do this party in Venice where I lived up on my roof. I'm really good friends with that guy, Charlie Tuna, and guys from Fishbone. There's this great band called House of Vibe, and they play Wednesdays at Harvell's. It's sort of like the local who's who of the West Side hip hop scene. And they would play on my roof every July 4th. And it was a crazy party. Everybody eating mushrooms and just having the time of their life. And the night before that party, I just needed to get away for a second. I was walking my dogs. I'm walking down the street. And, I see there's like a house party, these assholes in this party, and there's an old couple playing the didgeridoo, right? And they're sitting there, and it, you know, a man and his wife, and I see this one guy, and I just fucking lock onto this guy, and there's just something about it where I just couldn't take my eyes off him. He was with this group, everybody's all fucked up, but he was like the ringleader. And he goes up to this old woman who's playing the didgeridoo right next to her husband, and he puts the didgeridoo on his dick, so it looks like she's blowing his, you know, there's something about that just fucking pissed me off so much. And I'm just looking at him, and then all of a sudden, he locked onto my dog. And it was crazy, because I'm like 20 yards away from him, and with this dog right here, he calls boss over, and you know, boss runs over to him, right? And he's holding the dog, so I call boss back, and he held on to boss. And there's just something about my dogs and my family and my friends that I just like, I can't take that shit, man. And it was a different time in my life. So I went over and I grabbed boss from him, and the guy goes, "Hey man, get your hands off my dogs." And he's got all his friends right there, right? And I just looked at him, and I still just had a real coldness in my fucking heart, man. And I grabbed him and I started walking away. I said, "Come on, boss." And he said, "I told you not to, you know, grab my dog." And he and his buddy started following me. Pushes me in the back, and I turned around, boom, and I just hit him. And you know, at that point in my life, man, we were getting street fights all the time, man, all the fucking time. He was right up the street. I hit this guy, gets knocked out standing up, crashes his head on the pavement. He's fucking out. His buddies jump me. I'm trying to fight them off me. They get on top of me. All of a sudden, Kerrigan comes run. So I don't know how the fuck this guy heard about it, but Kerrigan comes and bam, and like he's trying to rip dudes off. And then the police come, and it's this huge mess, man. And when the thing gets all broken up, there's one guy, you know, lying in a pool of blood, and they say, "Who did this?" And it's their party. So me and Kerrigan are handcuffed on the side of the road, and they're all pouring on me, pouring beers on our heads because it's all their people, you know. And anyways, long story, fucking long. They ended up taking me away because the guy wasn't waking up. They put him in an ambulance. He still hadn't woken up 45 minutes later. And I'd been in trouble my whole life. And you know, I'm down there now. And, you know, I had a career, man. I was a series regular on a few TV shows. I'd done, you know, 12, 15 movies. And I'm sitting there on this bench in the Pacific Division. And, you know, all of a sudden, I remember being locked up when I was a kid because I'm in a situation where I'm handcuffed to this bench, and you know, they got the wall right there, so you can't even move to one side or the other. And I had to piss so fucking bad. I couldn't believe I'm at a situation when I piss, I can't go piss. I gotta ask somebody permission. He's not gonna let me. And these cops are on me. "Hey, if he doesn't wake up, that's it, motherfucker." You know how they are, just in my ear. "If you don't wake up, you're done." And I knew, man, right there on that bench, I said to myself, "Look, man, this is gonna go one of two ways. But if he doesn't wake up, I'm going down and I'm going through that room that way. And I'm done, man. I'm done with family. I'm done with friends. And I'm gonna be the devil. I know what it means to be locked up in California, and you ain't getting out of that clean. And I'm ready to be that guy. I'm ready." And it was a scary feeling, because I wasn't scared. It was peaceful. I'm ready to be that guy. But Lord, if you can just wake this guy up, like if you can just change this. I am done, man. I'm done with the bullshit. I'm done with the drinking. I'm done with the messing around. I'm going to commit to my lady. I'm going to commit to my work. I'm going to be about making a family, and I'm going to trim all the fat off my life. And I know I should have learned this lesson, but I need to learn it. But I've learned it now, if you just give me this shot. And look, sure enough, this guy ended up waking up. He ended up suing me for a whole shit ton of money, you know, because I had just done Night at the Museum too, which they fucking put my face on the poster. So my poster's all over California. He saw it. He goes, that's the guy that knocked me out. So now he's suing me for $2 million, saying he's got vertigo and PTSD and all this bullshit. And point being, man, right after that is when I was faced with this situation where I had an audition for Walking Dead. And July 3rd, 2010, 1 year later, I was on set for Walking Dead. I got married right after the first year of Walking Dead. And that's really when my life changed in every single way. And I started working different, started behaving different. And I can tell you, man, I've really, you know, something Sean says all the time, man. You know, I think the biggest gift you can hope for in this world, I don't mean to be, you know, preachy, man, but I think it's peace, man. If you can find some peace and peace of mind, I got nothing left to prove to anybody anymore, man. I have real peace. I'm in love with my wife. I'm in love with my kids. I'm in love with my career, and I got the best friends in the world. And there's no part of me anymore that needs to go out and be the guy. There's no part where if I see some sort of brand of injustice, I need to insert myself and say, hey, man, don't you fuck with that motherfucker. Now, don't get me wrong. You're not going to mess with my wife. You're not going to mess with my kids or my friends, but I'm not going around with this, you know, I think we're confused, man. I think we're confused that we feel like as men, we need to go prove ourselves all the time and we need to assert ourselves. And to me, honestly, there's actually nothing less manly, I think, than being the loudest voice in the room. And what I came to figure out, you know, literally a year later on July 3rd, 2010, I remember I ended up writing a letter. I never sent it to the guy. I wrote a letter to that guy that I knocked out. And I remember thinking and realizing that was me that, and not to get too trippy, but that was me that I knocked out. That was the old version of me, man. I saw shit in him. I saw behavior in him. I saw a brashness and a loudness and a disrespect in him that I'd seen in the younger version of myself. And I was done with that guy, man. I was done with that guy. And, you know, that event ended up really changing my life right there along with Walking Dead. And I think so, I don't have one without the other.
It's so weird how a negative turned into a positive.
If you can make it, man.
I still remember being in a jail cell with a fucking Armani suit on, with handcuffs on, and they just gave me 6 years, and I'm like, that's it. This is it. And I went to sleep. You know, after I got sentenced, I just laid my head down and fell asleep for 3 or 4 hours. I was done. And it took me more years to get peace, but you're absolutely right. There's nothing better than a peaceful man. Ever since I shot that Netflix thing in June, everything changed for me, especially comedy-wise. I'm a better comic because I'm at peace now. I really don't give a fuck that I bombed or whatever the fuck they think. It's what I do today, you know?
That's it.
And I go home at night. It's so weird how, was there a transition period when peace came into your life that you figured something was missing? Have you ever had that?
Look, man, I think anytime you give up anything, the first thing that happens is there's a big ass hole, you know. And when I sort of gave up kind of being crazy and going out and doing all these things, and you know, I didn't know what the fuck to do with myself. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know if I could act. I didn't know if, unless I was the guy sort of bleeding out and being the craziest. I mean, you can ask Kerrigan. I mean, I was the guy, man. I was the guy who was doing the craziest shit. And anything that people were down for, I was, hey man, let's go. And when I gave that up, you know, the case of my deal was, I sort of was under this, I was under this deal with the prosecutor's office that I had 3 years where I didn't need to be charged and didn't need to be convicted, but if I was arrested in association with any kind of violence, it was a mandatory 10 years in LA County. And those 3 years, man, right after that, I just cold turkey stopped. Just stopped everything. And I didn't know what I was really scared, man. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't know who the fuck I was if I wasn't, you know, being that guy. But you know, then, you know, that's life, man. That's growing up. It's like you start to get something new in, you don't know what the fuck it is, but you don't run from that. You run towards it. And I think it's weakness and cowardice to run back to what's familiar to you all the time. And I think especially, and if you're going to be an artist, You got to run to what scares you. You got to run to what you don't do well. You got to run, else you're just doing the same shit over and over again. And fuck you, man. Like, you got this opportunity. You got this opportunity to be a professional fucking artist. Like, challenge yourself.
I fucking
grow.
Love it now.
You know? Yeah, fuck
like,
yeah.
Now my
yeah.
dick gets hard. That's like, it, man. I go up there. You know, again, I always knew, you know, and it's dumb. I always knew from watching those stupid YouTube tapes that Lynyrd Skynyrd had something in their head. And in the documentary, they said our goal was to blow the band behind us out. Yeah. And that's what my goal is now. That's as it. Gentlemanly as I could sure. do, is if I'm at the Comedy Store, I'm destroying that thing. I don't care what comes out of my mouth no more.
Yeah.
I'm not politically correct at all no more. It doesn't matter to me. I'm going to take you into my world. And that's what stand-up is, taking you into my world, you know? Not to get too much into that. And after Walking Dead, it hasn't stopped.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Walking Dead was crazy, man, because, you know, we did this show that was, you know, look, man, it was a zombie show on AMC. We got picked up for
when you first episodes. Read the fucking pilot, you're like, are they fucking serious?
No, man, when I read that pilot, this is the best shit I ever read. I mean, really? I auditioned okay. for a network show that would have solved all my money problems. It would have, that lawsuit, I would have been able to piss on that fucking lawsuit. It would have just gone away. And I auditioned for it and I got the gig. It was a show that was in syndication. I would have been set forever. But I knew that I still had this Walking Dead audition. And I read that pilot and I said, that is the best script that I've ever read. That's the best pilot I've ever read. And I turned down the thing just to go do an audition. People thought I was fucking out of my mind. But I went in and it happened and it worked. And you know, it was a very humble job. Nobody thought it was going to be big like it was. But, you know, you had a bunch of people there that all really believed in it and believed in the same thing. It was a group of pirates, man, like badass actors, badass crew. You know, way out in the fucking woods in Atlanta. You know, there's no trailers and no craft service. You're just out there. People getting bit by spiders and snakes and shit like that. And it was just great. It was lightning in a bottle. And then it blew the fuck up. And the next thing I know, I'm getting killed off it. So then bring back all that fear. And of course, you're a fucking loser. That's what you deserve. Like, this was the fastest, you know, rise and fall ever.
I did 2 years and I could have been on a syndicated show.
Yeah.
Now you feel like that guy that turned down Friends.
That's it, man.
You know,
that's that
fucking guy that walks around. I turned down Friends. Really?
You, that's it. Go
you
for you.
Shoot yourself. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you should have been next to Bourdain. You know what I'm saying?
That's it.
You turned down Friends, you dumb fuck.
That's it.
I didn't like the creative freedom. Really?
Yeah. Shut
you
the
fuck
fucking
it, shut the fuck up.
But yeah, man.
But it's a blessing in disguise.
It was the best thing that ever happened.
Again.
Best thing that ever happened.
Again. Something happens and now, you're like me. Every time you do it, like every weekend, I swear to God, every weekend as I'm getting on the plane to come home, I'm like, I guarantee those people are going to call the club and they're going to cancel me at the next gig I'm going to. As even though I sold out the room, even though I killed them in my mind, I must have had one bad set one night. I didn't notch this together. I always think it's the last job.
Yeah. But look, man.
And as an actor, do you feel that?
100%.
Rap! 100%. And all of a sudden you're home for 3 days and you're like.
Yeah, I asked him what I was like that first week of this job. I was a mess. But I think that means you give a fuck. It means you care and you realize. And look, man, you know, the hardest thing for me is I got three little kids, you know, that I love more than anything in this world.
Anything.
And I mean anything. I kill for them, I'll die for them. And I'm away from them so much because of my work. And I'm putting their name on my work. That's what their daddy's building. That's why I'm not around. So I sure as fuck, I think about it every time before I start. You know, when they're older and they go back and they look, it's not because I was doing some doofy, you know, bullshit, man. You will see that I was working my ass off, that I was sweating my ass off, that I was giving everything I had. Because if I'm away from them, I'm not out in the club and I'm not.
Right, I'm the same.
Nah, man. If I'm got to be away from them.
I got to pick up an envelope to get away from Mercy.
That's it.
I'm sorry. I know your movie's going to get to a festival and I know it's going to be great, but you want me in Marina Del Rey for 3 days on the cuff. She's got to go beat karate at 4.
That's it.
I take her to Bully Buster at 4 and swimming at 5:30 and there's gymnastics. And that is, you know. I live in this area here where people send their nannies to karate. There's a couple of kids at Bully Buster that a lift pulls up. Where's the parents? Yeah. Here, I'm the piece of shit from Jersey that grew up with a single mom. My mom snorted coke and drank.
Yeah.
Well, my mom got involved in everything I did. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't even drive the kid to karate. Yeah.
No place I'd rather be. No place I'd rather be.
So, and me, you know, there's times I'm on the computer and I'm on fire. I'm giggling, I'm stoned, I'm putting my finger in her ass, yoga, I love yoga pussy, and I'm typing, I'm going nuts. And she just walks in, puts her leg on my leg, and goes, Daddy, how about some superhero high? And it ends. There's no, hold on, let me write one more paragraph. I finished the sentence, like, hold on, let Dad do this. And I sit there, and I put YouTube on for her. And you know what? Whatever money I could have made that Thursday night in whatever city, can't make up for that hour of sitting there. Because after 30 minutes, you're like, I can't get this hour back. Yeah, you're never going to get it back.
Yeah.
And I know, for me to be away from Mercy, it just takes a lot. Like tonight, I pick her up. We got two podcasts today.
That's it.
I pick her up at 5:30. We go for pizza tonight. Nice. We go swimming, pizza. We stop at Yum Yum Donuts. I told her I'd get her a donut tonight. Daddy, get me the blue ones with the sprinkles.
Yeah.
And I sit there and watch some movie about bumblebees, and she breaks the whole thing down. And God forbid I'd look away at the clock.
Because
she'll go, Dad, and she'll turn your cheek. I got one of those that sits on the lap and actually holds your cheek. So you have to watch it, and then she'll look back at you. Daddy, that's the guy.
I love that.
And that you cannot, you know, you look at, I'm sure you've met movie star sons.
Yeah.
And look what the kids are like. There was no attention.
Yeah.
There was Guinness and premieres, and you're special. You go to the front of the line because your daddy's in movies.
Yeah.
But there was no real hanging out, you know. Yeah. I respect you, man.
Thank you, brother.
In fucking 1,001 ways. Just your passion for comedy, your passion for acting, how you treated me on the fucking film.
Man, that movie, man. That movie. And it's great that he's coming today, that Pete's coming today.
Pete Siegel's a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
You know, when I got the audition for that, I look, you know, you get an audition. I got it from Dave Secor, right? The best. And we were with the same agent for a while.
Oh, nice.
Dave Secor used to wear bow ties. He's the best gay guy in the business. Yeah. He wore bow ties and he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Purple ones. Like, I'm here, I'm queer. I don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? And he called me up and he goes, hey, they called you in. And I did The Longest Yard for Peter Siegel when I was doing an 8-ball every 2 hours.
Right.
In fact, the producers pulled me aside one day. They're like, you gotta give it a breather.
On that film? On that film?
On The Longest Yard.
Oh, on The Longest Yard. Okay.
The Longest Yard, they sent me to a doctor.
Wow.
They knew something was up. I had twitched to me and shit.
Yeah.
You know, and they said, you gotta give it a breather. And then at the premiere, Pete Siegel had a couple cocktails in him. And he came up to me and he goes, you weren't my first choice. And I was like, you know what? You go fuck yourself, bitch. And they had to separate us at the premiere a little bit. That was how it ended. I knew he didn't like me because when you do an Adam Sandler film, you got two directors. You got the director and Adam. And I went with Adam. I had to go with Adam. You know, Adam was the one that hired me. So me and Pete had this never again. Then he did Get Smart, didn't call me in. And then when I saw the movie, I IMDb'd it. And Pete was in it. He was a director. And I go, I'm not going down there. I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
And then fucking, I go, who the fuck is he to tell me? If I kill it, he's got no choice.
That's it.
And I went down and killed it, went back again verbatim. And I told the casting director, who was Puerto Rican at the time. He's still Puerto Rican. I know him. I know him for years. I just tell him about, I pulled him aside. And I go, can I talk to you for a second? I go, listen, tell Pete when I did The Longest Yard, I had a lot of problems. But I took care of those problems.
Good for you.
I do a good job for him. And he goes, what are you talking about? It was Pete who called you in. So that was it.
Wow.
Like, it was so... After that, I confronted him on the set of The Longest Yard. That we spoke, and then I had him on the podcast. And I told him, he's got a great Twitter that he should come on. So he goes, you know, I'm coming on today.
Nice.
But no, we had a great time shooting that. And then...
Did you say goodbye to... did you say goodbye to De Niro on that?
Yes.
Yeah, tell me about that.
You know how he was.
Well, what was he like for you, man?
For me, he came in the first day, and I did that one scene where he goes, are you my trainer or something? And I go that way.
Yeah.
Then the second scene was with you when you interrupt us, and he kept calling me a fat fuck, and after every take, he kept going, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's so sweet.
He's so sweet. He goes, I won't use that word, and you get offended. I go, you better fucking use it.
Yeah.
And then I had a scene where he was jumping rope and I was busting his balls about his tits.
I remember that.
And then there was the last scene I shot with him was the best because LL Cool J kept calling him Benjamin Buttons.
He kept
saying, you Benjamin Buttons looking motherfucker and all this shit. And I'm how? That's when he fires whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But I think as I was leaving that night, I went to his assistant first, his trainer.
Sure.
And that's something I learned that I, as soon as I left that movie, I started doing.
Yeah.
You know, after he did Raging Bull, he hired that trainer. That's right. Was the offensive, or he was the strength and conditioning coach of the Jets.
Right.
So De Niro hired him for the summer to be his coach for the Raging Bull to get him into physical shape.
Right.
And he's worked for De Niro ever since. Yeah. So
great guy.
Great guy. So to get to De Niro, you kind of had to talk to him, and then they started. But he started talking to me direct, you know. Mm-hmm. And I play. You know, when you talk to De Niro or anybody like that, your heart's breaking inside. Mm-hmm. You feel like jerking off and putting it on your face. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just want to jerk off in your cup and put it on your face. You're like, I'm talking to De Niro, I'm talking to Pacino, I'm talking to whoever.
Yeah.
But then you just, because you realize they put their pants on one leg at a time.
That's it, man.
And he had like this great demeanor to him. Like, he was Robert De Niro, but didn't give a fuck. Yeah, I didn't call him Bobby.
Yeah.
You know, like the rest of these jerk offs. Yeah, I didn't know none of that shit.
Yeah.
And then at the premiere, he was sitting in front of me, and he just fell asleep 3 minutes into the movie. He's that old. He just, he was sitting there with a little cap,
passed the fuck out. God bless him. That's so good.
And my buddy kept going, should we wake him up? I'm like, nah. He's eight. He's like Sinatra at the end. He didn't remember the lyrics.
Yeah.
Sinatra at the end would go out with that wig so twisted, and he had the teleprompters, and he'd be singing New York, New York.
Yeah.
And he going, once they get old, just give, just pay the 80.
Yeah.
Don't expect much. Here's the 80. Just do what you do. You know, he was, I met him, I saw his social disorder. He has a social
big
disorder.
Big time, man.
And once you see it, you feel better about yourself, because we all have. I worked with him on Analyze That.
Oh, okay.
And that's when The Sopranos were very hot.
Yeah.
And we shot on that block.
Okay.
So all the New Jersey Italians were like, and all this shit. And he walked out of his trailer onto those 80 people, and he just slammed the door.
He's like, I can't.
That was it. Like, he fucking had the cops pull the people away. I realized his social, but no, I had a great experience with him.
And I loved him, man. You know, I played his son in the movie, and the only reason I did that movie, obviously, was like, you know, I just done Wolf of Wall Street, and all I, you know, when I heard I could work with him and I'd have scenes with him, I'm like, I'm fucking in. I'll do whatever I can to do this. And, you know, went out there, same as you. I really wanted to give him his space. You know, everybody's kind of around him, and I had so much respect for him, you know, because between takes, he just stands on his mark, and he's, you know, I mean, that movie, it wasn't exactly fucking, you know, I mean. It
wasn't Academy Award.
Nah, nobody knew, you know, but like, he just, you know, he would fucking put everything he had into it, and I had so much respect for him, and it was just, he's one of those guys, you know, you meet him, and then sometimes they turn out to be just such a fucking disappointment. He was just everything, man. He was everything for me. And I remember when the film was over, and you know, we had gotten close, we had gone on a couple dinners, and he had said some nice things sort of towards the end. And I remember on the last day, you know, I went up to him and I said, you know, it's going to be very hard for me to say goodbye to you. And he said, you know, I said, maybe I could, you know, I could come say goodbye when this is all done. He said, yeah. And again, I went to the assistant, you know, and they had me go to his trailer at the end of the day, and I was sort of waiting outside. I'm pacing back and forth, like, how am I going to say goodbye? I mean, he's my idol, you know, and I'm like pacing back and forth outside the trailer, and they're loading up. And then these three guys come out, and they come over to me, and they say, okay, Bob's ready for you. You can walk on in. I walk into his trailer, and it's just him in there, and he's mixed two martinis, you know, and I go, and it's just him and me. And I said, listen, I just want to tell you, you know, I've never said this to you before, but, you know, you're my favorite actor. And I said, look, I got a lot of trouble in my life, and you're the real reason why I am an actor. And when I saw the kind of roles that you played over the years, and I saw that you could do that, I realized that there was a certain kind of energy that when I tapped into, I only got in trouble. If I tapped into that energy like you did, I could actually make a life for myself. And now I got a life, and I got a family, and I got a career. And the whole time, it's like I was literally spitting. He wanted nothing to do with this. It was making him so uncomfortable. He's like pushing me away. And I said, look, no, listen, Mr. De Niro, I got to say this. I got to get this off my chest. You know what I mean? And he did not fucking want it. You know what I mean? And I was like, I got to say it. And then I said, you know, and that's just, you know, Bob De Niro, the actor. But now I've seen you, and I consider you a friend. And I can't believe your work ethic. I can't believe how committed you are. You know, you're so much of a better guy than I ever hoped or dreamed of. You know, I'm just kind of lit, and I'm crying like a little fucking baby. You know, it was so bad. You know, he just wants it to end and wants it to just stop. You know what I mean? So then it finally ends. You know what I mean? And like, I wasn't looking for anything back. I didn't want any. I sucked your dick, now suck mine. I wanted nothing. You know what I mean? I just wanted to tell him the fuck. I just wanted to get this off my chest because I thought I'd never live with myself if I didn't tell my idol that he's my fucking idol and that he was better than what I thought. And so when the conversation was over, naturally, it just sort of fell into this awkward silence because now he's got to say something. And he's sitting there and he's looking at me and he's like, you know, we do these things and then they end. And that's all he fucking said, you know what I mean? And he didn't mean anything by it, but, you know, he just couldn't, you know, he didn't want to engage. And I, you know, I felt so bad for kind of putting him in. That's it, because that was all on me, man, and I wasn't looking for anything back. But it's that social, you know, and I see it with a lot of great, like we're not in the, you know, it's like, and I'm sure it's the same with comics too. You can get in front of a room, you can get in front of a room and just rip the fucking place down. But I'm sure there's sometimes you're out with your daughter, you're out, you're doing your things. You don't want to be the fucking MC. You don't want to be the, like, that's, it's two different things. And just because you can do one doesn't mean you can do other. And sure as fuck doesn't mean you want to do the other. And I could tell, man, he just wanted to move on and get going. You know what I mean? And there was no lack of love in what he said. But I said what I needed to say.
When have you bumped into him again?
I have not bumped into him again. No. But he's, you know, I have bumped into, you know, Mr. Scorsese and, you know, other folks that I've worked with. And he's always passed along, you know, very kind. You know, he was very, very good to me. He was very good to me, very kind to me.
How is my man in Sicario? How is...
Which one?
The Spanish dude.
Benicio?
Yeah.
He's the fucking best. He's the best in the world. You love him to death. I fucking love him. I mean, look, man, I worked one day with him in the scene. You know, I just come off of this movie Fury, where they're, you know, we're 8 months in a fucking tank, you know, not showering, fucking, you know, Shia LaBeouf fucking, you know, pulling out his fucking teeth, and you know, we're all like going madmen in this fucking movie and pushing each other and, you know, throwing bottles of piss at each other when we feel like the acting's not good. So I came from that world right into 2 days on Sicario, and I remember I'm doing this scene with him and Josh Brolin. I'm in the back of the car,
right?
And the in the script it says my character, I think it was Ted or some shit, Ted is crying his eyes out. So the scene starts and they roll cameras, and I don't do anything. And Brolin's like, "Hey man, you gotta cry, man. Like, you gotta start." I mean, what do you mean my guy cry? I'm like, make me cry, motherfucker. You know, because I'm coming from fucking Fury where that's what it is. And I'm like, let's go. I'm not going to fucking cry. Fucking make me go. Let's go. Come on. What are we gonna? I'm like, fuck it. And the cameras were on, and that's how I got into it. And fucking Benicio just takes his fucking finger and grabs me and sticks
he
his
licks
fucking
it and he puts it in your fucking,
right in my
ear.
Fucking ear. And I'm like, ah, you know, and I started playing it, you know, like screaming, fucking, and they fucking, you know, and what a fucking, what a monster he is. I mean, what a great, you know, he was right. He was like, oh, you want to fucking play? You want to play big boy? Let's go big boy. And he just was, you know, he's a genius. He's a genius. And I love him for that, man. I love, he's one of my favorite, another guy who, and Brolin too. Another, I mean, I think Brolin is the fucking best.
Best.
Man.
I
the
love him.
Best.
Too.
He's
he was
so
great
good.
In American Gangster.
Oh, so fucking.
Damn, he was
so
good in American
fucking
Gangster.
Hard, man. So good. And you know, those are the guys, you know, I don't know. It's like, for me, I still go to movies for performances. You know,
I go to movies to go see
directors direct, and I go see actors act. You know, and if I know Brolin's doing something, Benicio's doing something, DiCaprio. You know, if those guys are doing something, you know, there's a list of them. I got to see it. I got to see what they're doing. You know,
listen, bro, it's not gonna be too long until you're gonna be one of those guys.
Thank you, brother.
I see it.
We'll see.
And I'm happy you took the time.
Oh fuck, man! Of course, man.
Here.
I'm such a fan of
it
this.
It meant
man.
The
this
world
is,
to me
is,
that you came
man,
down.
And man, you do a lot of good, man, on this show, man, because it's all fucking heart. You guys are funny.
No,
and
this
it's,
is,
but it's just
what it's
fucking
all about,
heart, man.
I don't
want to
hear
a big
no
heart,
shit.
Bro.
I want to hear about. And you brought the dogs, which
yeah.
When you hit me, I was in a meeting, so I couldn't spell it out for you.
Okay.
It gave me a fucking ear beating. I'm trying to say yes.
Yeah.
And me, I love dogs.
Okay.
I don't give a fuck about it. Look, I got St. Lazaro here or whatever.
Yeah.
But Sean, I got to tell you a funny story since this is your comic. I got to tell you, you weren't here. Joe Rogan used to, did you hear that? He had a dog for a while named Frank. Joe Rogan was a saver of pit bulls for a while. He had Frank, and then he had another guy, and then he got a girl from a friend of his that plays the guitar. The girl was a little chubbier and older, and she ended up killing one of the dogs. But before Frank died, we went to the Comedy Store on a Tuesday night. And this is when the Comedy Store was Mensa Morte. Nobody went down there. people had been shot. Black night, Tuesday night was black night. So nobody white went in there. It was really sad. The main room, Wednesdays was maybe 60 people. Thursday was maybe 65 people. Then the weekends were the weekends. But we were there like on a Wednesday night, saying there was 60 people in the audience. And Joe was coming from somewhere, from a set. He's bringing the fucking Frank with him. So I knew Frank at that time and Joe. So we're outside and I'm hugging Frank and whatever. And next thing you know, they go, Joe, you're up next. And he goes, Joe, can you just hold Frank for me? So I hold Frank by the stairs. You know, like if you go up to the belly room and Joe's on stage, but Frank could hear Joe's voice and he's going nuts. He's barking. So finally, one of Paulie's friends, that great guy, he comes over and he goes, Joe's in there yelling just to let the dog on stage. It's 10:15 at night. There's 60 people. So Frank, I leave him off the leash. He runs. He gets up on the stage. Joe gives the dog on stage. He goes, let's keep it going for Frank. Frank fucking goes into the shit position and takes a shit right on the fucking stage at the Comedy Store while everybody's in the audience. And it smells like 10 dead Iranians, right? It smells like the whole original room smells, the stairs in the hallway. Oh. Joe takes the dog off. He's like, I'm sorry, he ate a bad mouse. Who eats a good mouse? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's a bad fucking mouse? He took like a 6-inch shit on the stage, but it smelled so bad. So in between comics, they had to come up like this little Mexican dude and this white manager, and they had to scrub the shit. Joe's up there giving 20s out. Fucking. So sometimes that's what I kept thinking about. The dog's going to take a shit in the studio. And me and Lee are going to be cleaning it later on. What are you doing this thing with Christian Bale now? That's all. Sean's also got. Sean also has a few days on it. But you got Widow coming out.
Yeah, Widow's coming out. I got a movie with Shia LaBeouf that's coming out. And then this one, Ford Ferrari, that's going to be a big one. And then we just finished season 2 of Punisher.
Fuck.
Yeah, man.
So Tate said don't forget about him.
Yeah, fuck
because
yeah,
he sent Tate. Keith Jardine to you.
Keith's yes, the best, so man. You love I Keith. Love that motherfucker, man.
So he was saying last night, hopefully I get on Punisher fuck the third yeah. season.
I would love to have Tate. Tate's a great all guy. Those guys.
You were great in The Accountant, by the way.
Thanks, bro.
I watched that on two planes.
Thank you, dude.
You know, that's always on planes and shit and the whole thing. And
yeah.
Both of you guys, all three of you, I love you all. And anytime you have an hour to kill and you just want to talk some shit or about a movie,
fuck yeah,
please, you're always welcome here, brother. All right,
thanks, brother.
I want to thank John Bernthal for coming in. I mean, John, you're a fucking savage. I appreciate you with all my heart, and Sean and the guy and the dogs. I mean, it was a great podcast. We had a great time today. But listen, don't forget. Don't forget, not this week. I got nothing for you this week. I'm sorry. The following week, I'm at the Wilbur and at the Foxwoods, but that's sold out. I'm sorry about that. But what I do have is West Palm Beach, bitches, October 12th to 13th to the 15th. No, go to improv.com right now. That's what I do got. That's all I got for you. But now, like I talked about in the front of the show, ever since we started the podcast, everybody wants to know who's going to cover the lock, who's this, who's that. I got no idea. I can only recommend the service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to my bookie. You know why? Because you win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, over and unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. My bookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everybody the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Did you hear what I'm saying to you? 7 o'clock Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now, and my bookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. You got to enter promo code CHURCH to activate your offer. Again, listen, I'm playing. I'm going with my bookie. Again, why? Because they win, you get paid. It's that simple. But you got to enter promo code CHURCH when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out till 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code CHURCH. They had 25 to the end, so I know that it's CHURCH 25. All right, so CHURCH 25 after 7 o'clock. If it's up to you guys, I'd wait till after dinner and take that extra money and make some extra money. And that's the way it is. Go to mybookie.com/church. You play, you win, you get paid. It's that simple. One of my favorites and one of Lee's favorites, has always been Blue Apron. We've been working with them for years. Lee eats it a lot more than I do. I don't like cooking that much. I don't like looking at food uncooked. But Lee likes looking at doing the whole thing. And it works. Why? Because they deliver farm fresh ingredients right to your house. You choose from chef designed recipes. We deliver the ingredients and inspired ingredients, and you cook incredible meals in as little as 20 minutes. Let Blue Apron do the meal prep for you, making it back to school easier than ever. Dinner in as little as 20 minutes. Quick and easy recipe options with insanely delicious flavors. Perfectly proportioned ingredients delivered right to your door. Skip meal planning and shopping and get straight to cooking with Blue Apron. Not only that, they offer a wide variety of recipes. Whether you're looking for quick and easy meals or full culinary cooking experience, Blue Apron lets you choose from a wide range of recipes. Chef design recipes and exciting September partnerships with Bob Burgers and Whole 30 approved. This week's menu, check it out. Crispy chicken tenders with mashed potatoes. Yummy for your tummy. And pasta and creamy tomato sauce. Listen, why mess around? Check out this week's menu and go to blueapron.com right now, and I'm going to give you three meals for free. You heard it right here on the church. Three meals for free, blueapron.com/Joey. Again, that's blueapron.com/Joey. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And last but not least, my all-time favorite, ZipRecruiter. You know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. You know what is smart? You ready for this one? ZipRecruiter.com/church. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Why? It's got a powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills and education and experience for your job, and it actively invites them to apply. Who else does that? So you get the qualified candidates that you're looking for fast, and that's what you need. You want to make money? It's got to be fast. No more sorting through wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and this rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, the church family can try ZipRecruiter for free. Did you hear what I just said? Free. Exclusive. You ready for this one? ZipRecruiter.com/church. That's it. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/church, and you're gonna get hooked up for free, gratis, on a Monday with John Berthold in studio. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/church right now and get a free sign-up at ZipRecruiter and get your employee before the holidays. I want to thank John again, your family. I want to thank the Christ Killer. But most importantly, I want to thank you guys. I want you to start the week off strong. And don't forget, they're going to suck your dick now or they're going to suck your dick later. Somewhere along the line, they're going to suck your dick. So stick with it. Lee, kick this fucking mule. Thank you.
out and telling your soul around. People stop coming, all we do is just a grin and say we're